Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of. If it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom, it's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, we thank you so very much for your disclaimer that you've given us today, the preamble to these calls. It's very kind of you. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Edward here. I'll be doing the calls at this point forward. PJ has now been rearranged, if you would, into the assembly so that he's able to provide more work gets more work out as opposed to taking up time on these calls that I can be doing. Primarily, it's important to understand that there's two things at play. One is that people have issues derived from criminal or civil charges against them, and they're wanting to learn, understand, and affect a positive outcome. They already know that attorneys are not going to be there to in their best interest, but that they are there to attorn, the root word of the word attorney. And if you have a Black's Law Dictionary, you look it up, attorn means to, is it basically a debt collector in the kindest of terms. And they're there to take property from one to give it to another. It's simple as that. That's what attorn means. Anyways, so the format that I will be doing is taking you through various courses to peek and repeat the understand so that you have thorough understanding of the difference between a federal citizen, a United States citizen, and a state citizen or a union state citizen, an American national, and how the former has privileges granted to them by the Congress and all sorts of rules and regulations that they must follow. I think I heard once that if you took all of the entire Code of Federal Regulations, including the tax code on rice paper, it would be like 60-some feet in length if stacked in a straight line. Anyways, the point being is that we show you how to become free in the sense that the Founding Fathers fought and died for, pledged their lives, fortunes, and the sacred honor to acquire us into this position. And ever since that moment that we became a sovereign people. At that point in time, the battle plan was laid out for a long game to steal that from us. And the first major turn, if you would, against us was at the Civil War. People think that the Civil War was fought over slavery. That, my friends, is just the poster child. What was really in play was to invert the dynamics of the structure of our country. Our country was predicated upon the Almighty One, the creator of the universe, being first, his creation man being second, And then the third creation was man's creation in the form of governments, etc., which ideally were in image to the scriptures themselves. And that's indeed what we have and what we had. That's why Leviticus, in the book of Leviticus, it says he came to set the captives free. What's on our liberty bell? So the point being is that we're going to focus on the differences in the education that's involved, so that when you become more and more and more familiar with it, as opposed to being more bored with it after you've learned it. I sat down with somebody the other day and had a conversation with them, and they were actually in law school, and we were going back and forth. And they said, "Well, you're a lawyer." And I said, "No." They said, "Well, how do you know so much?" And I said, "I just read." You can read too. Just don't accept what you are told necessarily by your teachers, and challenge that thought on what you're told, and look into these matters. And the bottom line is that each of us need to be in a place where we can be responsive to the questions from lawyers, from judges, and so forth. The price of freedom is not free. And prayerfully, it doesn't have to be acquired at the point of a bayonet or by the loss of blood. We can get attain our goals through litigation when we're trapped in that scenario of dealing within the state. Prayerfully, as soon as we have acquired like 100-plus people in the Correct My Status program who have corrected their status, we will be opening up Seventh Amendment courts, just like we have the right to do, and then delivering judgments and entering those judgments into their records, or offering to enter into their records as a foreign judgment, which is perfectly lawful. They're just used to having foreign judgments entered from other countries. And the truth of the matter is, every one of the 50 states are foreign countries to the United States. And, you know, you learn these things as we go through this. So even though you may have many of these calls that are repetitious, it's to put you in a place and prepare you so that you can answer for yourself. That doesn't mean that you do it alone and you don't have help. That's what the team is for. And it's critical. It's important that you know that you have people here that are available to educate you and walk you through whatever litigation that you're being confronted with, and providing teaching syllabus material that, you know, you may think is unto its own self is something that you might want to file, or you might not. I have to be careful about how I phrase things, because we never want to be in a position where we're told that we're practicing law without a license. So, we tell you right up front in that disclaimer, if you need legal advice, hire an attorney. With that having been said, I'm going to start with the first teaching tonight, and then we'll go into the second. Recapping, we talked about last week how you were born as a first-class citizen, and then we gave you the 30,000-foot view of what was going on. So now we're talking about the origin of the federal citizen tonight, and then we will continue on into how state citizens are then converted into federal citizens. And after that, we'll open it up for questions and answers. So far, in this particular teaching, I've not provided any proof that the government actually recognizes two distinct classes of citizens. And I'll give that evidence to you now by describing the 13th and the 14th Amendments. In 1865, the 13th Amendment abolished slavery and involuntary servitude, except as punishment for a crime. The Supreme Court ruled that the 13th Amendment operated to free former slaves and to prohibit slavery, but it is in no way conferred citizenship to the former slaves, and or to those of races other than the white race, because the founders of the Constitution were all of the white race and spoke to it and addressed that. Now, if you noticed, I gave emphasis to the word involuntary servitude. I want you to catch up to the idea that you can volunteer into servitude, and in fact, that's what you've done. Anyways, this is a quote from Abraham Lincoln. It's from the fourth debate with Stephen Douglas at Charleston, Illinois, September 18, 1858. Lincoln said he did not want to free the slaves unless they were to be deported. Abraham Lincoln's quote said, quote, I will say then that I am not, nor have I ever been in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the white and black races, that I am not, nor ever have been in favor of making voters or jurors of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. And I will say in addition to this that there is a physical difference between the white and black races, which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together on terms of social and political equality. And inasmuch as they cannot so live, why they do remains together, there must be the position of superior and inferior. And I, as much as any other man, am in favor of having this superior position assigned to the white race. I say upon this occasion, I do not perceive that because the white man is to have the superior position, that the Negro should be denied anything or everything, end quote. As you can see here, this statement today, if broadcast out on live TV or on the social media, would be, you know, blatantly declared racist. Yet, you know, just 140 years ago or something like that, 150 years ago, this was said by Abraham Lincoln, you know, the guy that every American of African descent, you know, believes is their hero. The federal government did not have the authority to determine if former slaves could become a citizen of one of the several states because the Ninth and Tenth Amendments said that the powers not granted specifically to the federal government by the Constitution are, in fact, reserved to the states or to the people. History shows that the Pennsylvania Commonwealth and the New York State were nationalizing blacks as state citizens. In other states, blacks were not citizens and therefore did not have standing in any court. The answer to this problem then was, for them, the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment used the term citizen of the United States. That was a quote. The courts have ruled that this means federal citizenship, which is similar to a citizenship of the District of Columbia. Since the federal government didn't step in and tell Pennsylvania or New York that it couldn't make state citizens out of former black slaves, an argument could be made that the 14th Amendment was primarily written to afford voluntary citizenship to those of the black race that were recently freed by the 13th Amendment. For support of this, read the Slaughterhouse Cases, 16 Wall 3671. It did not include Indians and others not born in or subject to the jurisdiction of the United States, McKay versus Campbell. Thus, the amendment recognized that an individual can be a citizen of one of the several states without being a citizen of the United States, U.S. versus Anthony. In further quotes, a citizen of the United States without being a citizen of the state. That's a Slaughterhouse Case, and also U.S. versus Cruikshank. To restate, in the Slaughterhouse Cases supra, the court said, quote, it is quite clear, then, that there is a citizenship of the United States and a citizenship of a state, which are distinct from each other, which depend upon different characteristics or circumstances of the individual, of the privileges and immunities of the citizens of the United States, and of the privileges and immunities of the citizen of the state, and to what they respectfully are, we will presently consider. But we wish to state here that it is only the former which are placed by this clause under the protection of the federal Constitution, and the latter, whatever they may be, are not intended to have any additional protection by this paragraph of the amendment. That's going to be very clear that basically state people, citizens of a state, are superior in the quality, if you would, the first classness, if you would, of citizenship, and that those of the federal citizenships are second class and inferior. It's an inferior class of citizenship. And I bet they didn't teach you this in civics in school, did they? The court has also ruled, quote, that the term United States is a metaphor, meaning it's a figure of speech, end quote. Cunard Company versus Mellon, and that the term United States may be used in one of several senses. It may be merely the name of a sovereign occupying the position analogous to that of other sovereigns in the family of nations. It may designate territory over which the sovereignty of the United States extends, or it may be the collective name of the states which are united by and under the Constitution. This is the Hooven decision that you've heard us talk about so much. Did the courts really say that someone could be a citizen of a state without being a citizen of the United States? Well, yes, they did. It's true that the cases cited, they're old. Some are over 100, 150 years old, but none of these cases have ever been overturned by a more recent decision. So they are as valid today as they were 100 and 150 years ago. A more recent case is Cross versus the Board of Supervisors. It's 1966, which says, quote, both before and after the 14th Amendment to the Federal Constitution, it has not been necessary for a person to be a citizen of the United States in order to be a citizen of his state. And, of course, they were citing Cruikshank. The courts presume you to be a federal citizen without even telling you that there are different classes of citizens. And it's up to you to dispute this. Quote, unless the defendant can prove he is not a citizen of the United States, the IRS has the right to inquire and determine a tax liability, end quote. U.S. versus Slater, 545 Fed Sup. What this is saying is that you have got to be able to evidence that you're not a federal citizen. And that's what correcting my status is all about. Correct my status is all about the evidence that you need to be able to challenge and evidence that you are not a United States citizen. So this is all very interesting. How could a presumption of class of citizenship even be possible? It may only be guilty until proven innocent if you're a federal citizen. In 1866, Congress passed the first Civil Rights Act, which only applied to the District of Columbia and other federal territories. In 1868, the 14th Amendment was proclaimed to be passed. I said proclaimed to be passed because, well, if you follow the rules to the nit and picky, it wasn't passed, but it's still there. At this point, the number of subjects that the federal government had exclusive jurisdiction over to all were the former slaves that had not become state citizens. There are many reasons why I do not like the 14th Amendment. The first, it was never ratified. In State versus Phillips, also Diet versus Turner, which is the Utah Supreme Court case, it said, quote, I cannot believe that any court in full possession of all its faculties would ever rule that the 14th Amendment was properly approved and adopted. Further, and just recently in 1967, Congress tried to repeal the 14th Amendment on the ground that it is invalid, it's void, and it's unconstitutional. Go to the Congressional Record for the House, June 13, 1967, page 15,641. There it is. The 9 pages of argument that are recorded there in detail, they detail the infirmities that prove that the 14th Amendment was never ratified and thus is no law. So there you are. The 14th Amendment reads in pertinent part, quote, all persons, not people, now we're talking about persons, it's a separate legal term, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they, what? Reside. Remember the word reside and residence. When you hear those words, it should be like holy water on a vampire. You know, just you reel back from it. The validity of the public debt of the United States shall not be questioned, end quote. There's a wealth of deception in this above wording because of the sheer number of words that have specific or multiple meanings in law depending on how they're used. Go to the part that says, quote, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, end quote. The word the is used in a singular form. It's not plural, as in the word jurisdiction. If Congress meant the several states rather than just the District of Columbia, it would have been more correct to say simply, and subject to their jurisdictions. In addition, a new pecking order is established with the phrase, quote, are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside, end quote. If you search the term resident and legal residence, you'll find that it is the nexus that binds all of us to the state and federal enforcement of the commercial law statutes today. Resident is the short form or expression of the word resident alien and is used in state statutes to mean someone who exhibits actual presence in an area belonging to one nation while retaining a domicile or citizenship status within another foreign nation. Of course, that other nation would be the United States, the District of Columbia. The term legal residence further indicates that these two terms may be applied either to a geographical location, so we're talking about land, or a political jurisdiction. Now we're talking about people, the classes of citizenship. An individual may reside in one or the other, or in both at the same time. In California, Government Code Section 126, therein it sets forth the essential elements of a compact between this state and the federal government allowing reciprocal taxation of certain entities and then provide for concurrent jurisdiction within geographical boundaries. Both state and federal citizens are Americans. U.S. citizens are domiciled in, that's a legal term, in the District of Columbia, and they are a privileged alien to the states wherein they reside, and state citizens are domiciled in their state and are not aliens in their state. They also do not reside in their state. They are citizens of the state. The distinction may seem insignificant to you or even confusing, but it is not to the court. A state citizen has the right to travel in each of the 50 states, and he or she can file papers in any county courthouse in any state and become a citizen of that state. Most of the federal statutes, their laws, do not apply to citizens of a state. If the authority of the statute can be found in the organic constitution, then the statute is of a national character, as it applies to both state citizens as well as aliens. Quote, introducing the provisions which eventually became 18 U.S.C. 242, its sponsor, Senator Stewart, explicitly stated that the bill protected all, here's the quote, persons, end quote. Remember, people is on the states, persons are in the federal government. He noted that the bill simply extends to foreigners, not citizens, the protection of our laws. United States versus Utterson, 480 F. Supp, 1369 and 1373. This is a 1979 decision, so it's recent. So what could this mean? Well, it implies that citizens of a state already had the protections introduced by this statute, but it further extended to foreigners in this protection also. So what is a foreigner if they're not also an alien? The privileges granted by the sovereign, that is the governments, in their capacity to license, that is to conduct what might otherwise be illegal, are always taxable and regulatable. Rights such as those envisioned by the Founding Fathers, they are not taxable, they are not regulatable, because they are exercises of the common law right that could be completely destroyed by government through taxation or regulation. These are certain maxims of law so well established that they are irrefutable. For example, look to Frost and Frost Trucking versus Railroad Commission of California, 271 U.S. 583. It's a 1925 decision. Now, in 1868, back to the 14th year of the 14th Amendment, we have a class of citizenship created, which is, quote, subject, end quote, by grant or privilege from a sovereign power, that sovereign power being the federal Congress, and exercising exclusive authority to govern its territory under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution. Federal citizens are created by the Congress. It is self-evident that all state citizens are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, and that governments are instituted to secure these rights. It's also self-evident truth that the sovereign Creator can never create an entity, can never create a government, and then assign it more power than what the Creator possesses to begin with. Further, the Constitution of the United States of America did not repeal the Articles of Confederation. This is key. The Constitution for the United States of America did not repeal the Articles of Confederation. It only intended to, quote, make a more perfect union, end quote. So, in reality, when Congress assembled, or not, when the Founding Fathers assembled to create a Constitution for the United States of America, they were already operating under the Articles of Confederation. What they did is they amended the Articles of Confederation. They renamed the Articles of Confederation to a Constitution for the United States of America. We're still operating in the same document. It's just a more perfect union that was created out of it, just to dot your I's and cross your T's, basically. Therefore, it logically follows that the Creator did not purposely intend to alter their status as master to just accept a role as servant to its own creation. And this is plainly shown throughout the Constitution, but especially set forth in the Tenth Amendment. Tenth Amendment is where the states all have kept and maintained their rights as independent countries. We have in, the right, quote, the right to tax and regulate the national citizenship is an inherent right under the rule of the law of nations, which is part of the law of the United States, as described specifically in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, end quote. The Lusitania, 251 F715, it said further, this jurisdiction extends to citizens of the United States wherever resident, so that's in the several states, for the exercise of the privileges, not the rights, but for the privileges and immunities and protection of the federal citizenship, Cook versus Tate. The right to trial by jury in civil cases, guaranteed by the Seventh Amendment, and the right to bear arms, guaranteed by the Second Amendment, have been distinctly held not to be privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States guaranteed by the 14th Amendment against abridgment by the states. And in effect, the same decision was made in respect to the guarantee against prosecution, except by indictment or a grand jury. It's contained in the 5th Amendment. And in respect of the right to be confronted with witnesses, contained in the 6th Amendment. So right there, it's saying that your federal citizens have no expectation to enjoy the rights that were just enumerated in this part of the conversation. The privileges and immunities, the civil rights as opposed to natural rights, the civil rights of the 14th Amendment citizens were derived or taken from the Constitution, but are not identical to those referred to in Article 4, Section 2 of the Constitution, which recognizes the existence of state citizens who are not citizens of the United States, because there was no such animal to begin with in 1787. Plainly spoken, natural rights considered to be grants from the Creator of the universe, they are clearly different from civil rights that were granted by the Congress for its own brand of a franchised citizen in the 14th Amendment. In Nickel versus Rosenfield, we're told, quote, a civil right is a right given and protected by law, man's law, and a person's enjoyment thereof is regulated entirely by law that created it. In Wadley versus Newell, Title 42 of the U.S. Code contains the civil rights law, and it says, quote, rights under 42 U.S.C.S. Section 1983 are for citizens of the United States and not of state, end quote. Now, what does that mean? That means that when you hear other people promoting remedies, and they say, well, we can sue them under Title 42, 1983, or Title 18, Section 242. No, you can't, because those causes of action are limited only to federal citizens. You can't be one or the other. You've got to be one or the other. You can't. Well, you can be both as well, but if you're both, then you're going to be taxed, and you're going to be held to that accountability. So what do you have? Well, the wording in Title 42, Section 1983 is commonly referred to as deprivation of rights under color of law. Now, under the Seventh Amendment of our federal Constitution, we have the right, the people have the right to assemble courts, grand juries, petit juries, etc. And in doing so, under the common law, the American common law, we can sue under deprivation of rights under color of law. Notice there was no code or anything written into that because there is none. It's a common law action as well. So depending on who's prosecuting it, depends on whether it's being prosecuted at American common law or is it being prosecuted under the federal system. In summary, what we're talking about here is simply a master-servant relationship. And prior to the 14th Amendment, there were state citizens and non-citizens. State citizens were the master in relations to the government. After the 14th Amendment that was declared to be passed, a new class of citizenship was created, which is both privileged and a servant or subject to its creator, the federal government. So, with that having been said, we're going to close this part of the teaching tonight. Next week, we're going to go ahead and talk about how state citizens were converted into federal citizens, and I think it's appropriate now to open up for questions and answers. So, press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hands, and I will unmute your phone. We can ask a question. For those of you on Freedoms Radio, you'll see a place where you have the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. Left click onto it and or into it and type away your comment or question. On the outside of that rectangle, you will see a place where you can put in your contact information, then hit submit, and we're good to go. So we'll start with Michael in Las Vegas, Las Wages. Go ahead, Michael.
Okay, good evening. This really is sort of running along that line, but the federal government keeps records of everything, correct?
Yep.
Does that keep
records? Yes, they do.
Then people that excommunicate or expatriate, people that become citizens, and people that become corrected citizens, they keep records of all that too, right?
That's correct, but understand that expatriation is different from correcting your status. Woefully
right.
Different.
But would they ever show the true number of how many people have expatriated, have corrected their status, or those that have come into the country and become federal citizens, which they weren't offered state citizenship is what I'm drawing out of this. They were just offered federal citizenship.
Well, they took, at the time of your birth, when a birth certificate was generated, that was forwarded by the hospital into the state's vital statistics. The state's vital statistics, when it notated all its record keeping, then forwarded it to the State Department of the United States. Therein, we didn't know this, but the State Department, having a choice to put you in as a state citizen, which they had evidence of that in their hand. So here's the crime. They had evidence of you being a citizen of Florida or a citizen of, whatever. That was in their hand. Yet they put you over here as a 14th Amendment citizen, as a federal citizen, as a United States citizen. That's where they dumped you. And that lay dormant, if you would. And then as you grew older, you got to a place where you wanted to go, say, hunting with Dad when you were 10 years old. You had to get a hunting license. So you know, you requested from them permission to hunt, and you got a hunting license. You, same thing with a fishing license. You got older, you wanted to get behind the wheel of the family car, and you had to get a driver's license or a learner's permit license. And, you know, then you went back later, you fell in love, you wanted to get married, you had a marriage license. And the list goes on, ad infinitum. You asked permission, and they granted it. You went to your sovereign, is what the prima facie evidence is. And in reality, you never had to ask them for any of that because you were a state citizen. The process that we're doing here is that we are assisting you in correcting your status with the State Department of the United States, then getting a passport and a passport book and a passport card in your possession that when scanned shows the investigating officer that you are to be ignored. That's the whole thing behind it. In fact, this is so critical and so important, and the fulcrum, the leverage in any litigation, that there will be no, except for Bernie's trusts and corporation soul, there will be no information providers will take on any new students until they have corrected their status or in process of correcting their status. So that's critical.
That's understandable, yes.
Yeah.
That's all I have for tonight. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Michael. I want to mention for everyone on the call, there was, I don't know if it was an accident or what happened or just turning the wrong way. I have no clue. But late Saturday evening, GW was gravely injured. Gravely injured his back. And he's been doing therapy since then. The only place he's comfortable is on the floor. So he's not been able to assist me in any further work in this process, just to let you know, because I was supposed to have got started with this Monday morning, and was not able to do this yet. I'm waiting for him to get back with me. So let's check to see if Freedom's Radio got any questions. If there's only one question tonight, we'll close early, and we shouldn't have to do that. Hold on a second. Let me refresh here. Nothing there. Anyone else, press star 2 on your keypad, or we're going to close it. No, here we go. Hello, Ed. Thank you, Ed. What's your thoughts?
Let's keep this call going. listen to this. Number one, what you just said, we consented, got a fishing license, got a driver's license. We consented to get a hunter's license, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, applying for benefits from a government that's with Pennsylvania, it would be the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania or the state of Pennsylvania. It's always the state of Pennsylvania in relation to the federal government. But still a subsidiary of that government. And
right.
So those are all to make sure through their public school systems and every single thing they teach all along the way pervasive to the society that they have structured to not be according to the Constitution. It's them that had that Article 4. They were declared the guarantor of Republican in form governments in every state. And instead, they established municipalities out of every state under their territorial rule over Washington, D.C., and other territories like it.
Can I interject here? May I interject?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes and no. What they did in 1940 was what's called the Buck Act.
Right.
And this was done through the... It set the groundwork for what would become known as the United States Postal Act or something to that
sure.
effect.
Sure.
They established the state territories with similar sounding appellations.
Understood.
Being instead of Florida, it was the state of Florida. Instead of New Hampshire, it's the state of New Hampshire. The state of New Hampshire is a territory of the United States. So, and that's also under the postal zip code. You never get a letter or anything from the government, federal government, without it being, or state or county government, whatever, without a zip code attached to it, because they're claiming that you're on their imaginary property,
right,
which is like a clear sheet of plastic on top of the land. And that's where they say you are, instead of in the land.
Yeah.
You're on the land as opposed to in the land. And that difference being is where they get this authority to make any of these wild claims.
Let me add a thought to that. The Judiciary Act of 1789 did exactly that. For Pennsylvania, it declared the whole state to be a U.S. judicial district. It wasn't just the dockages in the eastern part of the state, or looking forward to dockages on Lake Erie or over here in Pittsburgh. It wasn't just those. They declared the whole state. They did that with several states. They declared just particular areas to be judicial districts. But the point is they made the judicial districts to be a land that was actually a creation of a state within the state. And they proceeded to rule it. That's what their cases were all about.
Right.
And that was already in 1789. And then they made the Bill of Rights. After they'd already done that, they made a Bill of Rights for who? They'd already declared the lands of each state to be districts of the United States. And
right.
That word district showed up first in the Northwest Ordinance, Northwest Territory Ordinance, where the lands of the Northwest Territories, the five states, were actually owned by Congress, made for the benefit of all the other states. And
right.
But they were regulated by Congress. And that was the first time district showed up. And it's always been my thought that when they created the judicial districts out of the various states under the Act of 1789, they were doing the same thing, but it was a scam. But I wanted to go on a little bit too. The other thing is, we've studied in the last 15 years the various ways we didn't know. That it all applied to U.S. citizens and that there were state citizens involved that it didn't apply to, and that most of us were actually state citizens, but moving forward as unknown to ourselves as U.S. citizens that were slaves or taxpayers. But there was still laws as to how taxpayers would be taxpayers. And the setup of the Internal Revenue Service at various points is also unlawful. They can be seen to have different places within the U.S. Code do not have corresponding federal regulations to be applied to people. And it's necessary for the statute and the regulation to go together. And all this stuff has been discussed in various courses by people that you've had on that I've listened to and had papers from, and there's many, many ways that they've that they can be seen to be fraudulent. And yet, we're hearing that Slater case that says that they have the right to make you prove that you're not a U.S. citizen and otherwise go after you on the taxes. But they don't have the right. I can't imagine them having a legal right if they're outside of their own laws that regulate them. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So how do we proceed against...
You proceed by correcting your status first. Once you've got your passport in your hand, once you've got your pass card in your hand, and any litigation, past, present, or future, occurs, you can go back and reopen the case, the matter up, and you are able to assert that they never had the jurisdiction to begin with. Remember, it's a maxim of law. Jurisdiction has no statute of limitations. Challenge has no statute of limitations. Okay, so there you go.
And
the thing is, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
The thing is, they are lawful. Everything that they do is lawful, providing they're operating on their land with their persons. And that's why you challenge your citizenship, your personam jurisdiction, and territorium jurisdiction. Remember, the word United States, as defined in Black's Law, applies as a descriptive to both land and people. So they can sit there, and the reason that people need to be on these calls is because if you go over it and over it and over it and over it, it was Bruce Lee that said, I'm not afraid of the opponent that knows 1,000 moves. I'm afraid of the opponent that knows one move that he's practiced 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Okay? So by just going over this and over this again to where it becomes a part of you, at that point, you're able to articulate, whether it's on the side of the road, which you should never enter into an argument there, other than presenting your facts for the record. It's in the courtroom, and you don't let them move past anything until a proper hearing is held for standing. You just don't do it. And that's what we're talking about, and that's what we're learning on all of these calls. And, of course, the most key point is to remind you, there is a team in place. PJ, John, Chris Ann, Bernie on occasion will jump, come in when pulled, as well as other information providers you've never even heard of, and you don't, because they're just supportive. They don't want to know nothing from nobody. They just want to do their work, and it's support work. So, like supporting actors and stuff like that. Anything else, Ed?
Yeah, just... give my best wishes to GW. I know what that's like.
Yeah, I can imagine. I had a conversation with him short this afternoon, and he was in a lot of pain. Anyways, next is Brian. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, Michael. Had a couple of questions that originated from last week when I used the affidavit for a traffic ticket.
Uh-huh.
Just to tell everyone, the initial meeting and prosecutor was pulling people back to see what they wanted to do, and I wanted to submit the paperwork to him, and he was kind of cocky and said, "No, I've heard it all. Give it to the clerk." And so I proceeded to do that. Anyway, out of that, I was able to submit it to the clerk once I went in front of the judge. One of his questions was, "Do I want a jury trial?" And I said, I don't know at this time. Can we address that at the next session?
Yeah, that's a question for PJ or for John, either one.
Okay.
And what I'd ask you to do is to put your question in writing, and I'll get that in front of them and get it back to you as quickly as I can, as quickly as they respond. What I would have said to the cocky prosecutor who thinks his feces doesn't stink.
Right.
Is, I would say, so I'm to understand then that you are colluding then with the law enforcement officer in a pattern of practice of criminal activity. Am I to understand that correctly, Mr. Smith? And he goes, and, you know, and he may say, well, what criminal activity? Deprivation of rights under color of law? Oh, you're talking about Title 42, 1983? No, no, I'm talking about Article 7 of our federal constitution in American common law. I'm not talking about what your state has statutes have to say about it.
Right.
And I'd give him that to think about. I wouldn't be cocky when I say it. It'd be very pleasant, but I would have said that to him. And the thing is, everyone on this call needs to get to that point and surpass my point. Because you guys are a lot younger than me. I'm 70 years old, just turned 70. I've been doing this nearly 30 years. But you young pups and puppies on the call, you got a whole lifetime. You're able to start way early, way earlier than me. So you need to do that. Anything else, Brian?
One little item. I probably wasn't supposed to bring a license or passport up there, but they asked me for one. I said, no, I don't have that. And so they made me sign an affidavit. I made sure I was careful in the wording there that, you know, I was issued that ticket. And that was from the clerk.
Yeah, well, the ticket even fails as an indictment. As a American national, you can only be brought into court, you know, by, you know, proper paperwork, indictment, and so forth. An officer stopping you on the side of the road, that's not even a criminal activity, yet you are in criminal court. Traffic court is criminal court. Why do we say that? Well, because in civil court, you have a complaint. Is there a complaint? No. Traffic ticket is not a complaint, not in its form or fashion. So,
go ahead.
No, I'm done, really.
I was going to say, so, I mean, not showing my ID was the proper thing to do, or does that matter now that I have the affidavit?
The affidavit of citizenship?
Right. I mean, would it be okay to show my ID, or did I make the proper decision in not doing that?
Well, you can show a driver's license. That's not a problem. There's a court case that you've heard us talk about before that the driver's license is not evidence to deprive you of any of your natural rights.
Right.
So it's, you could have, why would I have a driver's license? Well, I may be traveling through the Washington, D.C. area. I'm on their land.
Well, I was thinking in the context of PJ's favorite saying is, no, Your Honor, I have no evidence of that in my possession. And, you know, if I just showed them a passport or
sure,
whatever, that would be evidence. But,
well, when you and others acquire your citizenship passport, your pass card, whatever it's called, when you have that, it'll be a world of difference. But for right now, you're going to have to engage in the fight.
Okay. So engaging, so I could show it is no big deal. I've got a good fight with the affidavit, is what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
The affidavit is primary facie evidence anyways. It's your affidavit. It's testimony. Who's going to rebut your testimony? They're going to try to say something to you. They'll use the word, well, Mr. Brian, where do you reside? Is it, we have here, it's 123 Main Street. Do you reside there? Your Honor, I have no evidence that I have residence anywhere.
That makes sense.
I have domicile here. I have domicile here in Texas.
Right.
And these things that I'm saying over and over again, it needs to be integrated into your speech. There needs to be knee-jerk reaction, like holy water on the vampire. Knee-jerk reaction when certain words and phrases are used because those are their trips. That's a tripwire.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. Nothing else.
My pleasure. Let me check Freedoms Radio and see if anybody over there has raised their hands, ask a question. If not, we'll come back to Freedoms Radio, give you one more time. press star 2 on your keypad, or otherwise we're going to call it an evening. Let me get some feedback from you all. Do you like this changed format? I miss PJ. It took a load off of me to be able to keep sit quiet and let him talk. But is there anybody that has any comment that can give me lead or direction here on what you want? Press star 2 if you have an answer for that question, please. Whoa, whoa, boom, 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 boom. Okay, start with Ed, go to Brian, go to Michael.
Hey, I think it's a little early to be able to tell that. It's just been one call. It's I like hearing from PJ. I like hearing the interaction between the two of you. But you're fine, too. You do a good job as well. La-di-da.
La-di-da. Thank you. Brian?
Yeah, I like the idea of it. I think it, you know, categorically we'll be able to go down these, you know, if they're labeled appropriately and re-listen to them and write down things that we maybe missed. So I think it's a good idea.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Well, I'd like to see sort of a group interaction, like two or three people with you or PJ, or where we can sort of discuss a little more. But on the other thing of residence, I have a lot of people, because I travel all over and work these different jobs. Well, where do you live? And I'll look at them, and I won't say nothing for a minute, and then I'll tell them, well, I live in my body because you can't live anywhere else. And they're just dumbfounded by that.
Don't make me think.
You can't say you live anywhere else because you live in your body.
Yep.
And that's a fact. And a scientific fact is your eyes are the only living thing unless you open your mouth and expose your tongue. And you want to keep your mouth shut and not say anything.
Yeah, there's a movie I watched about a lawyer that inherited another lawyer had died and left his practice to this lawyer, and he walked in the room, and the first thing he saw in the lawyer's office was this big, big open-mouth bass mounted on the wall, and underneath it said, "Had I only learned to keep my mouth shut, I wouldn't be here."
So true.
Yeah. All right, well, I want to thank everyone for joining us. I'll see what I can do about bringing some other information providers on the call to mix it up a bit. I do want Ed, Brian, Michael, your phones are open. Do you like the idea of me going through these different classes that graduate you from, you know, the opening, if you would, and then through the end?
Oh, absolutely. We need to have more of a format on that where people can get the printed part of it so they can go look at the law and see where these things came from, because the fraud has been over 100 years of fraud, de facto government.
Right. Anyone that wants the breakdown of this, email me for me to send you a little article I wrote. Well, I didn't write the article. What I did is I collected information from about a dozen different articles and put it all together under one format. Once we were colonists, just send me a request for Once We Were Colonists. I'll send it over to you. It's something that should be printed and read and reread. Brian, you started to say something. I over-talked you. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. You know, I like the randomness of, you know, having PJ or somebody in here, but at the same time, you know, for a learning, you know, mechanism, I think this is a really good format. But like you said, change it up maybe every once in a while.
Sure. All right. And then I forgot, just a moment ago, Kent, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, Michael. I like what you're doing. But I tend to agree with Michael. I would like to see some other information providers, not necessarily the same one all the time, so there would be some more give and take and some other opinions and conclusions on how things might be handled. In addition to that, I would like to see a little more clarification on the position that Greg takes and, let's say, the position that Bernie takes, where he really feels that we remain as co-defendants on debt, that we haven't done everything we need to do with rescissions and revocations. I would like there to be further discussion on that. And that may not necessarily apply to everybody, but I certainly think it applies from what I've heard in the kind of questions that are asked on this call by at least a few people. I think that that would help people that want to make sure that they have this whole thing covered from A to Z and they don't want any comebacks down the road. I mean, some people are just, you know, have more entanglements in their life than other people have. And I would feel more comfortable with a better description of that and some more conversation about that. Now, again, it might not apply to everybody, or some people may be happy with just correcting their status, and that's good enough. I still have some questions on carrying that further. So I would like to see some more time spent on that also. I don't know whether you agree with me, but that you asked for some opinions or conclusions, and that's where I'm coming from.
Right. All right, I'm looking for a particular case. It's in that article, once we were
colonists subject
to the king. Here we go. Let me open it up. This court case says that you can be both, okay? Says you can be both, and that each state, if you would, is responsible for protecting your rights. Let me go here, see if I can find it real quick. I wasn't prepared on that one, so. Not far. I recognize some of these statutes here. Bear with me. All right. Houston versus Moore, 18 U.S. 1. This is 1820. Quote, every citizen of a state owes a double allegiance. He enjoys the protection and participates in the government of both the state and the United States. In Moore versus Illinois, 1852, quote, every citizen of the United States is also a citizen of a state or territory. He may be said to owe allegiance to two sovereigns and may be liable to punishment for an infraction of the laws of either. But the one I'm looking for says that both, that the states are there to protect. Where is it? Well, all right. Basically, what it amounts to is that both jurisdictions, whether it's the state government or the federal government, as a citizen of both, because you can be a citizen of both, they may require you, the federal government may require this or that of you, but if that contravenes with your natural rights, your natural rights trump your privileges, your civil rights. So that, for instance, if they require you to pay a tax because you're a member, you're part of the United States, the federal extension, yes, but your state, as a state citizen on state land, the tax, the national tax that you pay must be apportioned. So their graduated tax that they have is diminished, is superseded by the federal constitution of apportionment. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense, but let me ask you another question. So you were saying a little bit ago, a short time ago, that, well, you could have your, I think you were telling Brian, you could have your driver's license because, well, let's say you're driving through Washington, D.C., federal territory. Well, I mean, you could be driving through Fort Meade or Fort Dix. Do you think that they could hold you because you didn't have a driver's license and you're passing through that 20 or 25% of federal territory within the geographic United States? Or would you say in that case, your natural rights would supersede the need for a driver's license in a quote-unquote federal territory?
Well, when they pull you over, because you're on a military base and you were doing 55 and a 30, and you hand them your State Department identification card, when they scan it and run it, it says, do not investigate, do not detain, release. Lifetime concealed carry permit. That stops them right there.
Well, I guess that would be the essence of my question. Would that really stop them if they know the whole story and they know that you're in a federal territory? Would they say, well, wait a minute, you know, you have this that says you have natural rights, you're a state citizen. Would that still supersede it, or could they say, well, would they be any validity to them saying, but wait a minute, you're in the federal territory, so the story's a little different here.
Right. But I remember, too, traversing through federal territory is not the same as being in the federal territory.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the case off the top, but something like that.
Yeah. Well, I guess a lot of these things will remain open to question. You know, people are people. Individuals are individuals. Those persons are
right.
Who they are. And until everybody's educated, I'm sure that these issues are going to come up. And it goes back to what you said. You have to be able to stand on your own and know these things, you know, backwards and forwards.
Right. And remember that being gracious will carry you a lot farther than being outwardly belligerent.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else, Kent? We'll go to Jennifer, and then we'll go home. Go ahead.
That's it. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Kent. Jennifer?
Hi.
Not yet.
Hello?
I said hello? Not yet.
Oh.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Well, I thought you said not yet. Okay.
No, I'm not high yet.
Oh.
Never mind.
All right, let's be slow tonight. So are there any replacement people for GW, PJ, or Bernie that we could hear from, you know, just so we can get to know maybe other people that also know that could jump in every now and again?
Yeah. Bernie has two replacements for himself trained. As soon as, quote, the event takes place, we will be bringing aboard two other people. I see if I can't get them to come on a call and just talk and interact with me on one of these Tuesday night calls. Raven is on the call tonight. Raven is on the team. I not to be offensive to anybody, I've got the A team and the B team. The A team is like John, PJ, Bernie, GW. B team is Raven and Brian will be coming in on board for something else that we'll be doing that's on this call after the event. Say hello, Raven, if you have phone is not on mute. Raven. I see her there. So
good evening, everyone.
Hey there, Raven.
Hi, good evening.
Yeah.
So other people know GW's process?
No. Well, there's many, many, many people around the country that are doing the status correction. And I've read three of them. I've read through their material, and I have to tell you that I'm actually frightened for their students that are going through that process. Two of their students have already contacted me And I've had them had direct conversation with GW because it's as soon as something is making money, and this is making money, then everyone crawls out of the woodwork that is going to try to copy it and get on that bandwagon and do what they can to sell the process. But the problem is that some of them are absolutely not doing it right. Same like when Bernie gets the opportunity to look at somebody else's corporation sole paperwork and, you know, he writes back, here's a fatal flaw, there's a fatal flaw, there's a fatal flaw, et cetera. And furthermore, there's no support that these other three groups that I've investigated so far have. So to answer your question, there are many people that are doing this throughout the internet, and, you know, just be cautious of you know, who you talk to and to test.
Well, I didn't mean everything. I didn't mean other groups. I mean, does GW has someone who he works with who helps him that knows his process, so if anything happens to GW, they could take over doing it the same way he does it. I don't care about other groups.
Yeah. I have yet to been introduced to his mentor. I will be introduced to his mentor. I will get a list of people that I can contact should something tragic happen to GW. None of us know when we draw our last breath or when we're no longer capable of doing something. I have what I call a 100-year plan. The first thing that I learned to do young in my life was to teach other people to replace me. If I could teach you to replace me, then while you were still working for me, you would do the best job, and the burden was taken off of my shoulders. The one burden that was never taken off of my shoulders was to watch and observe what you were doing. But, you know, the best place to do is to put people in a place where they can replace you. And once that's done, now you're into your next generation. So, you know, people like PJ, myself, John, Bernie, we have fewer shopping days remaining. And that's why we have like Raven here and others that you have not been introduced yet on the sidelines. And as soon as the event takes place, money's available, then we will be, you know, they will be active, overtly active. Right now, Raven is quietly working, doing paralegal work, something that she hadn't, as I understand it, has not done since, you know, with any real activity since the 70s or the 80s. But that's what she did back then. And it's wonderful because now we've got someone that is able to assist. And she's not only assisting Bernie, which is where she started, but, you know, she's doing some stuff for John and, you know, for GW and everybody else. So it works great.
Okay. Well, yeah, I was just wondering because I just thought maybe we could be introduced before the event happens, because who knows when or if, and it'd be nice to know them, you know, even if you meet them once on a call, just to see what they're like and be confident that they're knowledgeable to take over. That's all.
Sure. Jim that will be coming aboard, his specialty, he's been doing this for a number of years, is credit cards. So he will be coming aboard and, you know, assisting in that capacity as well. But he's there to learn under John. Raven is here to learn under John and to also learn under PJ and Bernie as well. Kent raised his hand one more time. Let's see what we got there, and then we're going to call it an evening if we may. Go ahead, Kent.
Yeah, Mike, I guess it's appropriate that I ask the question. Do we have two questions, actually? Number one, do we have a replacement for you?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
That will be Chris Ann, and that may be my son. My son, you hear his voice on every 15 minutes, Martin, of the call. He does the disclaimer. He did start the disclaimer, 2013, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, he's been doing it since then. He is understated in his knowledge. He's a very quiet learner. Back when he was in his mid-20s, being stupid, you know. Anyways, he got himself in some serious credit debt, and so he handled it, and he wiped out twice $30,000 in debt, and got rid of it all just because he knew what to do, and he learned that by doing these calls, you know, 10, 15 years ago every day. So, yes, I do have replacements.
Oh, that's why I guess he sounds something like you. Your voices are very similar, at least to my ear they are.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. And would you also ask Raven to get back to me on that private filing issue and also on the other issue that I raised regarding the dealing with the banks and setting up the bank accounts?
Well, she heard you, so I guess she'll take care of that tomorrow.
Okay, very good.
I don't know.
Thank you very much for your help.
Raven, what's left on your table for that?
Pardon me?
Did you hear Kent's question?
Yes. We can take care of it tomorrow.
Okay. So sometime tomorrow after 11 o'clock Eastern time, we'll do this.
Okay,
I want to thank everyone for joining us this evening. It was a great call. Until next week. Good night and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm.